This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody!
You're listening to a special presentation from the Kings of Sport. It's the Ringside Rap WWE Payback Post Show, powered by Place to Be Nation at placetobenation.com.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports program, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports show hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm the godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partners in crime, Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham. And Marcus, I'm down with the L.A. Kings, Vanderberg. What's going on, fellas?
What's up, Nate?
Bow down to the Kings.
We are here tonight in this extended edition of the Ringside Rap, if you will, to talk about WWE Payback. But before that, let's get into some real sports really quick. Moments ago in an exciting Game 7, the L.A. Kings defeated the Chicago Blackhawks, and I didn't really care either way, but now I'm just happy because we get the Kings of Sport versus the Mr. Throwback Thursday Stanley Cup Series.
It's on, Bill. Bring it.
You don't stand a chance, New York. Don't even show up.
I thought Alfred was going to hit us with that Booker T. Mr. Throwback Thursday, we coming for you, nigga. But yeah, it was pretty good. We'll get into our thoughts in depth coming up on Thursday's edition of the Kings of Sport. But real quick, what did you guys think about the game? I was watching it in and out, switching back and forth my attention between hockey and the pay-per-view. What did you guys think of Game 7?
Hockey is stressful, especially playoff hockey, and especially playoff hockey in overtime. It's really stressful. At that point, I was glad it was done. I mean, if they lost, that would have sucked, but there's only so much overtime hockey you can tolerate as a fan, and I was reaching my point, so I'm glad they won.
Yeah, I love that fervor of overtime as the next shot wins. I love that in hockey. And I was basically, because I was watching on the WWE Network, I wasn't able to go back and forth at least easily. So I had hockey going pretty much updates on my feed on the internet as I was watching back. And so I'm going back and forth. And, you know, I see the Kings go down 0-2 early thinking this is going to be an absolute blowout. And just watching it was very exciting. And after Payback ended, I was able to see the entire overtime as short as it was. And I'm very happy the Kings won. So I thought it was a great game.
Yeah, I'm not even a hockey fan, but I was intrigued and enthralled by Game 7. It was a great series. Hats off to the Blackhawks. But this is the series that I think everybody, including Gary Bettman, wants to see New York and L.A.
Well, he would have had better ratings, I think, with Chicago.
Really?
I
mean, you think that would have been a better drawing?
Oh, yeah. They draw more TV fans.
I guess Midwest, hockey country.
Chicago, the Blackhawks are sort of like the Cowboys in the sense where you can find Blackhawks fans pretty much anywhere in the country.
Or the original six.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of the, you know, their history. The Kings are, you're banking on the city of Los Angeles to become bandwagon fans, and that's a risky proposition.
Yeah, what else are you going to do out there? It's not like the Clippers are doing anything in the playoffs.
That is true.
Under new management, is that the sign outside of the Staples Center?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that on the upcoming show, talking about the NBA and the NHL finals. But real quick, before we get to the wrestling, I have one question for Big Nasty because, you know, me and Marcus are a little bit older. I'm Southern, so maybe I'm a little bit more conservative. Alfred's probably a little bit more liberal, maybe the most liberal out of the three of us. Alfred, yes. What would you do if another grown-ass man came up to you and blew in your ear?
I wouldn't be as good as LeBron James was, but that's why he's LeBron James, a consummate pro. I probably would have started. Maybe if there was an African spear around, I would have, you know, started sharpening that up or something. But, you know, LeBron James is a pro.
Yes, yes. Shout out to Lance Stevenson.
Just Lance being Lance, man.
He should be in the WWE. Make a great heel.
He would.
Well, speaking of the worldwide leader in sports entertainment, they just held their Payback pay-per-view this evening, and to paraphrase the late, great James Brown, we got down with the network. That ain't right. Hollin' cussing, watching midgets wrestle like they want to fight. Payback, is it a thing we got to see, or did it do a damn thing for you and me? We are going to talk about it, give you our feelings about the show, and Big Nasty, if you will, like we always do on these wrap-up shows for these pay-per-views, why don't you go down the card and take us through WWE Payback.
Okay, well, we start with the rematch of the century on the pre-show, El Torito versus Hornswoggle, and they had another very good match that the crowd's into. They knew their roles. They didn't try to make it a straight-up wrestling match. It was comedy involved. The match really started to encapsulate the fans when they did the dives to the outside. You saw Hornswoggle dive. And then El Torito hit this really nice Hurricanrana on Heath Slater that sent him to the outside, toppling everybody over. At one point, Hornswoggle ripped off El Torito's mask, thinking he had won the match, according to the announcers. But El Torito had another mask on, so he hit a springboard moonsault on Hornswoggle for the win. Therefore, per the stipulations of mask versus hair, El Torito keeps his mask, and Hornswoggle had to shave his head. After this match, there was a bell, because you get that countdown ticker in the bottom corner of the screen in the lower third. There was about 6.5 minutes left, and they're just shaving his head. And I guess they figured it doesn't make good TV to just, you know, keep showing him having his head shaved. So they showed a couple replays, and then they threw it back to the pre-show announce table with about 3 minutes left. I thought it was a very good match. I was entertained by it. What did you guys think, starting with Nate?
It is what it is. I felt about this match pretty much the same way I felt about the WLC match at Extreme Rules. You know, it wasn't what I came to see, but by the same token, it was pretty entertaining. Hats off to both of those guys. I mean, the outcome wasn't in doubt, because if you take off Torito's mask, you know, what the hell good is he? So I knew Hornswoggle was going to lose. My problem came at the end of the match, and it's a problem that all these hair stipulation matches get into, and that's in the shaving. And, you know, you're not going to have time to completely shave a person bald during, you know, the 5 minutes you've got allotted on the broadcast. But at least, you know, if you go back to that WrestleMania, I forget which one it was, with Victoria and Molly Holly. At least they gave us an update later on in the show, and Molly was completely bald. Hornswoggle, he just had like the white man George Jefferson or the Stephen A. Smith. You know what I mean? He had like, he was bald in the middle, and he had like the little hair in the back. And I was like, come on, man. If you're going to do a hair match, at least, you know, that's the payoff. And we didn't get the full payoff on that.
Stephen A. Smidge. I like that. Well, real quick, Nate, you said you saw the post show and Hornswoggle did an interview. Was he completely bald then?
No, he wasn't even bald then. He had the same, you know, the middle was gone, but he still had the sides. And, you know, the post show, that's something else, the press conference, because he's like, this is going to hurt my career in Hollywood and destroy my financial standing in the community. And that was good. But I'm like, come on, if you're going to do a hair match, you know, at least we have to see that person bald. That's, you know, that's what you pay for, if you paid for it.
Wow, who knew you had standards when it came to hair matches?
I am a very, very strict person when it comes to, I'm a purist when it comes to hair versus hair, mask matches, any of those big-time stipulations, tuxedo matches, Marcus. I'm old school.
Listen, the haircut he left was more embarrassing than having his head completely shaved, so I didn't really have a big issue with it.
I hope he keeps it. He looks like a rock star. I mean, I think that you can get over doing that. But, you know, it was what it was. Marcus, did do anything for you?
No, not really.
at least they kept the match short.
Very nice. Very nicely done. Yeah, that door was wide open, just blasted through it.
It's going to be that kind of night, folks. That kind of show.
Well, the show went on as Sheamus got set to take on Cesaro. If you'll remember, they had a match for – it was a non-title match and Cesaro won, so it naturally set up this United States Championship match. It was really one of those other brawling matches. They were really stiff with one another, which I guess that's how they each like to work, just bruising each other with European uppercuts. At one point, Cesaro hit the big swing on Sheamus, got about 22 revolutions, and shortly after, Sheamus rolled up Cesaro for the win. It's worth mentioning, before this match, Paul Heyman came out to a huge reception, and he said he's there for a Paul Heyman guy, to which the crowd, right on cue, chanted CM Punk. Paul Heyman mentioned that CM Punk, we didn't see him by name, but he said that Paul Heyman guy is not here tonight. He's at the United Center watching the Chicago Blackhawks lose to the LA Kings, which he would be right. So Sheamus over Cesaro with a roll up. I have a feeling they did that finish because it doesn't really hurt Cesaro. He had a lot of offense, but is this a great match or not? What did you think about it, Marcus?
I guess the right guy got over if they're going to move on to bigger and better things with Cesaro next month at Money in the Bank. I still don't understand what it's actually, you know, I understand he's a babyface, Sheamus that is, but he's sort of just blasé at this point. And, you know, the title's not going to help him much. I just wonder which direction they go with Sheamus next.
And I thought it was a solid match. I think, you know, Sheamus, he's not my favorite worker, but there are certain guys that he can have good matches with. Wade Barrett, Christian, Daniel Bryan, and Cesaro is another one of those guys. I wasn't surprised by the outcome because, you know, like you said, Alfred, you know, Cesaro basically is Teflon at this point. He can absorb the loss. I also like that somebody rolled him up after the big swing because, you know, that's a move where he plays the dizziness. He shows that after he does the move. And it's like, why wouldn't somebody, if you were able to contain your balance and your composure, why wouldn't you just roll this dude up? And it was a pretty neat finish. I liked it. It was creative in a way. And, you know, again, like Marcus said, it just sets up another match between these two, which should be another good one.
I feel like WWE is hedging their bets with Sheamus. I think they want to turn him heel and have him be the next guy to face Daniel Bryan, but they want to see how this neck injury plays out and how soon Daniel Bryan can come back. So they can't make Sheamus heel just yet. And I just feel like the ending of Raw where Cesaro wouldn't shake his hand, they kind of focused on Sheamus, that kind of planted a seed like he's going to turn heel. And then to have a big guy get a roll-up win, I just think is a heelish type victory. If the little guy, if a smaller underdog wins with the roll-up, okay, but if Sheamus does that, you don't expect Sheamus to win that way. So I just feel like they're slowly but surely moving to a Sheamus heel turn. And otherwise, I feel like both of them right now are in the same boat to where you don't really know where they're going to go next. I don't feel very bullish on Cesaro. I think Paul Heyman is way too much part of that act, and that's really, he's there to remind everybody that Brock Lesnar is still employed at the WWE, and I don't think that does any favors for Cesaro. So I'm kind of worried for both of them.
You're right, though. Heyman was awesome at the beginning, dry snitching on CM Punk. I really enjoyed that. He knows how to toy with the crowd, especially this type of crowd in Chicago. And, you know, I've always thought that Cesaro is good and Heyman is good, but I don't necessarily think that they're good together for what the WWE wants to accomplish.
Right. Well, I thought they wanted to accomplish a heel turn for Cody Rhodes, but that didn't seem to happen once again at Payback as Cody Rhodes and Goldust took on Rybacksel. Now, going into this match, they really focus on the fact that the Rhodes brothers are stronger than ever and they're one unit and they've had problems, but they're going to get on the right track. So you think that, well, here comes finally the Cody Rhodes full-on heel turn. They wrestled a very standard match against Rybacksel. Cody Rhodes eventually took shell shock and lost the match. And after the match, Cody Rhodes got a bit of an attitude with Goldust. You think it's coming. Then Cody Rhodes gets on the mic and he says, "You're going to need to find a better tag team partner than me." And he leaves. And so it seemed more like an honorable babyface thing to do, if you ask me, drawing sympathy from the crowd. Goldust and Cody Rhodes look like they may be on their way to a split, maybe a soft split. But what did you think of this angle, Nate?
You said you were confused or scratching your head about the direction Sheamus is going, and I've been scratching my head about this Rhodes Brothers things for months. You know, first of all, they got really cold on the team, and then you got Cody teasing that he's going to be a heel, and then at the end of this match, you got Cody just like, oh, you need a better partner, brother. You need a better partner. And you got Goldust sitting there looking like Ron Isley talking about, I'm your brother. Don't you know? And I don't know. Like does this, I think eventually you have to go with the heel turn for Cody, but I don't know if they've just been better off to have him, you know, maybe they want to save that for Raw, but, you know, I thought tonight would have been the night that we got the full-out heel turn from Cody.
Yeah, I was quite confused. I thought for sure we were getting the heel turn, but instead we got what we got. As long as they just break up this tag team, because this tag team is pretty flat right now, and you know, if they want to finally do that singles run and have Goldust make his exit, I'd be all for it. But the timing seems weird. This seems like it could have been best served around WrestleMania, not in the middle of the summer.
I was gonna say, do you think that this is something that maybe they're setting up for SummerSlam, Marcus?
I could see that. Yeah, that's the next big show. So yeah, that would make sense.
I could see it too, but they're running out of time. I think it's one thing to drag out a feud and really build up to a payoff. The longer they drag this out, the more I feel like it's literally just being dragged on and on and on. And they're in the mid-card, and they're very cold at this point, and there's no momentum. So if they don't do anything soon, people are just going to stop caring if they haven't stopped caring already.
And, I mean, this is a feud where, you know, this is the type of feud where you can get so much investment from the crowd because they're really behind Goldust right now. Cody makes a good heel, and then you can always bring Dusty out, you know, on the week before whatever big show they're going to fight. Boy, I don't want you fighting, you understand. I know you're half brother, but you got to make up and have Cody lay out his old man. Like, that would be a great spot, you know, to lead into that match.
Oh, they would need that to have people care at this point. I would have no problem with that. But we go from gold to red, white, and blue on both accounts as Rusev takes on Big E. Now, the entrance was, to me, unintentional humor. Lana did her whole Vladimir Putin thing, and Rusev comes out with his flag, and then Big E comes out with his flag, and they do this shot where they've got both these big hosses waving their flags. And I said on Twitter, I thought this should have been the match. Like, you just wave your flag until you blow up. And, you know, the winner is the one who's the last man standing. But, you know, Rusev and Big E in this patriotic battle. This was a better match than I think anybody anticipated it being. It was kept short. The big spot came when Big E speared Rusev out of the ring. This is a spot he's done before, but it looks great every time. He did kind of like a suicide dive spear while Rusev was on the apron. They get back in the ring, and within seconds, Rusev does his bicycle kick into the accolade, and Rusev defeats Big E. I just thought the way Big E sold that bicycle kick like he was knocked out should be a meme anytime now. It was just brilliant how his eyes literally rolled to the back of his head, and Rusev continues to win. So this is really his first competitive match, and I thought he did well. Marcus, your thoughts?
Yeah, short and sweet. It's only 3 minutes. I think that's the right range for him at the moment. He beat a black wrestler, so that continues on. So I don't know who's next, Mark Henry. Has he had anything with Mark Henry yet? I can't remember.
No, you know it's coming. You know it's
Henry's
coming.
Henry's the payoff for the black, you know. Him or JTG has to be the payoff for
Yeah, he's lurking around. JT's lurking around somewhere.
Yeah. So it was short and sweet, and Lana in A+ as usual.
Yeah. Lana is definitely the highlight of any Rusev match. But again, man, when I was watching this, Alfred, I was like, okay, this is going to be cool. This is going to be competitive. And what, 3.5 minutes later, I was like, that's it?
He gone.
Yeah, I was like, I had a flashback to a Biz Markie, a Three Dog Night. I was like, the jobber is black. The winner's white. If you put them together, it's a Rusev fight. Because that's the pattern for every damn Rusev match. And I don't know, man. I think, on the one hand, if you want to build Rusev, this was a good quality win for him. But what are they doing with Big E, man? Like, they have, I don't know what, if he did something backstage or what, but they've just completely cooled off on this guy who, you know, as I mentioned a couple months back when I went to the WWE house show in Hampton, Big E was, after Cena and Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, he was the guy that got the most applause. And it's like, you've got a guy that's big, the guy that can connect with the fans, and you're wasting them. So I don't know what they got going on with Big E.
Yeah, I think this is just par for the course with WWE. I don't think anymore it's very accurate to say, well, he did something backstage. It's just what they do, and I think maybe it's to keep people's ego in check. It's just – maybe sometimes you just don't have anything for them and you can only book so many main eventers. But whatever it is, WWE will book somebody to be very hot upon their debut. And then they'll come down a peg or two or three or four. Some people recover from it more times than not. They don't. You see what's going on with Dolph Ziggler, who wasn't even on the show. You see what's going on with Damien, who pretty much had his whole entire gimmick neutered. And he's just this crazy guy who dresses up in costumes. So this is what WWE does. And I don't agree with it. I don't think it's a very smart business decision to do this with your talent. But Big E seems to be the latest victim of this type of booking.
Like, you know what would have been smart? And, you know, we kind of touched on it earlier, where I don't think Cesaro needs Heyman. I don't really think that combination, as great as both guys are individually, I don't think it really gels. Why wouldn't you have Big E be the Paul Heyman guy? And then that way Big E starts to get over with Heyman. And then eventually, if you want to do it, you can have the Heyman guys, Brock and Big E, have a feud.
Yeah, I think that was shrewdly booked. They could draw a lot of money. Because Big E, I still think, is a type of star that, you know, he's that traditional Vince McMahon guy who he's just a big guy. He's athletic. And if you just book him strongly, I think booking him on his way up to Brock Lesnar would be better business than doing so with Cesaro. But Cesaro is another very talented guy, too. So you never know what they can do. But if you don't like black wrestlers getting, you're going to hate this next segment because we have Bo Dallas against Kofi Kingston. Now, if you watch the pre-show, it was kind of awkward how this was done. It was almost as if it was a shoot to where they interrupted their coverage and Booker T alerts Kofi Kingston, hey, dog, you know, Kofi Kingston, who's on the panel, like, you got a match tonight. You got a match with Bo Dallas.
By the way, right during the CM Punk chant is breaking out.
Right exactly. Middle. And it's funny. He goes, wait, hold up. And he's getting a message, but they quiet down, and you hear the CM Punk chant take over. So it was really bad timing by Booker T. That's just everything that he really says on that panel, because he always seems to be talking over somebody. And then Booker T alerts Kofi Kingston. So Kofi, you would think he would have a snappy line or something like this. But it seemed like a shoot, because Kofi seemed like legitimately caught off guard. Like, I got a match tonight? I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm going to get a payday on pay-per-view.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever. I think that maybe enhanced the pre-show type segment that they just completely threw everybody off guard. We'll have to see whether or not this was a shoot. But Kofi Kingston had a match. He came out. Bo Dallas came out to what I thought was a positive reaction. He cut his standard promo, again, training the Chicago Blackhawks fans by saying, even though the Blackhawks will lose their match, and yes, he called it a match against the Kings, that doesn't make all you losers. All you have to do is believe. And before the match could get started, out comes Kane for no apparent reason, and he destroys Kofi Kingston. So Bo Dallas, like a true heel, runs out, and he watches it from afar. And then after Kofi Kingston is being tended to by the EMTs and the officials, Bo Dallas says, you'll be back on your feet in no time. All you have to do is believe. And at this point, you get a pretty audible We Believe chant. So this is the type of gimmick that seems to be over with these smart marks, because really he came from NXT, and that's something that the internet fans have really taken a liking to. So nobody really wins, but Bo Dallas is pretty showcase of his character. Nate, what did you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, this was all designed to get Bo over with this crowd. That, like you said, the smart marks dig him. I'm still not sold on him in terms of being a main roster player. You know, with that Sin Cara deal last week, it didn't really do a whole lot for me, but I'm willing to give it a little bit of time. The other thing, though, with Kane, and this may just be because it's late, but I'm like, hold on, Kane and crush the brother, much like he did at the Hall of Fame ceremony with Mr. T. Kane wears red. Russians wear red. Rusev is a Russian who crushes brothers. That's a tag team right there.
Yeah, it is, like, because that makes no sense.
I'm sure somebody out there is like, that is brilliant. Vince Russo's like, that's brilliant.
That's not the guy you want to put some of your ideas.
Under the mask, Vladimir Putin. Boom.
Oh,
boom. They've been building it up. Mother Russia is coming back to the...
Yeah, Kane's political views don't slant that way. You clearly haven't heard this man talk. He leans highly to the right, so no Mother Russia.
He considers himself a libertarian, but a lot of libertarians are Republicans in disguise.
Code.
Code. Yeah, libertarians are just Republicans that smoke weed.
Yeah.
Basically.
Who's his friend, that Tea Party hardcore, like, pseudo-racist that he supports? His name escapes me.
Grandpa?
Rand Paul, yes, yes. Yeah. As soon as he aligned with Rand Paul, that pretty much tells you the whole story. Okay, well, we go from one non-match to another match that I thought was okay. Bad News Barrett taking on Rob Van Dam for the Intercontinental Championship. Basically, the crowd was split. You got some ECW chants. You got Let's Go, you know, Bad News Barrett, RVD chants. And you get the same about 10 spots you got from any RVD match until RVD hit a split-legged moonsault to which Wade Barrett blocked with his knees and hit the bullhammer for the win. Wade Barrett continues on as the Intercontinental Champion, Nate.
Yeah, and this was kind of like we saw the Smart Marks having to decide between like their old girlfriend from 10 years ago versus their new flame. They're like, oh, we love RVD, but we love B&B too. You know, it's a good match to put Barrett over, continue his push. I think there's some potential there. RVD, I don't know what the hell he's doing in the company because there's nothing that he's doing right now that somebody younger and cheaper couldn't be doing. I think his run on this last comeback has been pretty uneventful. But, you know, it's a paycheck, so I can't hate the man for that. But I am interested in seeing where they go with Barrett because a segment of the crowd wants to turn this guy babyface so bad. And, you know, are you going to get that moment where you almost get a double turn if they decide to do some type of unification match with the IC title and the US title where Sheamus goes heel and Bad News Barrett goes face?
Yeah, I don't see a unification match happening anytime soon, considering they still have two titles that they're carrying around for Daniel Bryan. It doesn't make sense to have two titles, two secondary titles to be carried around. So, but yeah, Barrett continues to impress me. I'm glad he has overcome that stupid gimmick. Well, what was once a stupid gimmick has now turned into a great gimmick. But yeah, as for Van Dam, his 90 days must be coming up soon because it's been flat. He came back. When was that comeback? Right after Mania?
It was right after WrestleMania. Yes.
Yeah, it was a flat response then. It's been flat ever since. And if he's really doing the 90 days on, 90 days off, then he's probably 60 days in almost. So if he makes it to SummerSlam, I'll be surprised at this rate.
And they really dropped that Cesaro feud pretty quickly. Like, I think that's the one feud where you got Heyman, you know, trying to take out Van Dam. Like, that would have been the feud I would continue with, but I think they only did like what, one or two matches?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, a couple matches. I think it was two matches. But you know, what I like about Wade Barrett, I love the gimmick, as you guys know, since day one. I thought it was going to catch on, and it's done a good job. It's done its job. What I notice about this character is really the Intercontinental Championship and how they've really pumped that up. As you've seen with the last two pay-per-views, you earn a shot at the IC title, they book some kind of gimmick, whether it's a tournament, whether it's beat the clock. I think next pay-per-view, they should book some type of battle royal. I think they should always have some meritocracy in order to earn a shot at the IC title so that when you get to the champion, this guy who's earned his shot is already credible. And when the champion beats him, which is a guy like RVD, not only was he credible for winning the beat the clock challenge, he's RVD. So he is good in this spot to just lose to an up-and-comer. And I think not only does that help Wade Barrett, it's helped the Intercontinental Championship. And if you compare that to the United States title, which was booked as lazily as you can book a title, just a non-title win leads to a title match, that's not the type of booking that's going to help either Sheamus or the U.S. title. So I really like what they've done with the IC title. It really does remind me of what it was in the 80s when it was this workhorse title that all the guys who are up and coming are going to fight for.
It's still early, but he's probably the best booked champ, at least since Cody Rhodes. When Cody Rhodes brought back that title, the old title, and made it relevant again, because from when Rhodes dropped it 2 years ago to now, it's been, I mean, I can run you the names: Big Show, Cody Rhodes, Money Bat, Christian, The Miz, Kofi Kingston, Wade Barrett, The Miz, Wade Barrett, Curtis Axel, Big E. So none of those reigns have been, you know, have stood out in the last 2 years.
I don't know.
You weren't a fan of the Curtis Axel era?
No, I was surprised he had it for that long.
I'm sure WWE was too, and it seems like they do this with the secondary titles, is that whenever it's defended is when they lose a title. But that's not how you build up a title. This is how you do it, is you have one guy dominate the division until he loses it so it can mean something. So I love it. And we were talking about Rob Van Dam's 90 days. Let's talk about John Cena and Bray Wyatt's 10 seconds in the last man standing match, which was basically a six-man tag team match. John Cena, Bray Wyatt, this was a crazy match. Both guys worked very hard. And John Cena, after coming out and facing that three-on-one disadvantage, crowd was surprised to see the Usos come out and even the odds. Big spots of the match, one of the biggest, started with John Cena, who chucked stairs right outside to Bray Wyatt's face. It looked very scary, and I'm surprised he wasn't legit busted open by this, but it was a really cool-looking spot. Attitude adjustment on the outside on Bray Wyatt, where he almost counted down, and the Wyatts came out to beat up Cena, help him up. For a segment of this, the Wyatts and Usos had brawled to the back and it disappeared, but this is when they made their way back. And all hell breaks loose at this point because Jey Uso hits a bump butt on Eric Rowan through a table, leading followed by a superplex by Luke Harper on Jimmy Uso. Bray Wyatt then shortly after hit a flying forearm through the timekeeper table on John Cena. They fought out through the crowd, and John Cena hit a attitude adjustment on Bray Wyatt through a wooden, you know, one of those production trunks. He then threw another trunk on Bray Wyatt, literally burying him, as JBL pointed out. And Wyatt took the 10 count. John Cena wins. This has to be the last match of this feud. And if it is, I really do think it ended on the right note, Marcus.
Please let it be the end of this feud. Please, no more of these two. I was so excited at first. I had to talk myself into this feud before Mania. And then once Mania happened, I was all downhill. And I am still downhill on these two. No more. I don't care what they do next. I don't care if Cena challenges for the title. Just anything but these two again. I'm done. No more.
And see, I was the opposite. I was really high on this feud heading into Mania because I thought they had probably the best book feud on that card up to that point. But then once, from the moment John Cena won that first match, it's all been downhill for me. Not taking anything away from Bray Wyatt's performance. You know, he's still great on the mic, but the stuff with, what was it, the kid in the cage that cost Cena the match at Extreme Rules, that was terrible. This match, it was solid. I like, the one thing I will say that I liked about the last few weeks or so of the Cena-Wyatt feud is kind of how the Usos have been elevated to a certain extent. And it reminds me of, you know, when Hogan used to have his buddies, like, you know, Brutus or
Nasty Boys.
Yeah. And then, you know, the mid-carders would get elevated by being the champs' flunkies, for lack of a better word. And so, you know, I'm assuming that we're going to get an Usos versus Rowan and Harper feud out of this, maybe. But I don't know where you go with Bray and Cena.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways you can go with either of them. I think the feud did its job. Is John Cena had a formidable foe. Bray Wyatt was able to feud with John Cena for 3 months, thereby making him like a main eventer by proxy. I had no problem with the feud. My only problem was what seemed to be backwards booking, is that the way they booked the steel cage match, John Cena had already won, and he was complaining about how the Wyatts had instituted outside interference, so now we're going to go to a steel cage. And then in the steel cage match, the Wyatts were just as much of a part of that match, if not more, than they were with the WrestleMania match, and Bray Wyatt I could have flip-flopped that had Bray Wyatt win at WrestleMania and John Cena win the next two matches. But this has been kind of hit or miss. My biggest problem has been Bray Wyatt really embracing himself as a babyface. But I thought it was shrewd how WWE took it back to him calling himself a god, you know, kind of tricking fans into saying, okay, we're not going to cheer for this guy anymore. So, you know, I think it's going to do its job. I think this is exactly what Bray Wyatt needed. I don't think it hurts him at all to lose to John Cena, especially the fact that John Cena needed two trunks and the Usos to beat Bray. You know, it was a great feud, and I'm just very curious to see whether or not Bray Wyatt will be booked in the Money in the Bank match. But that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I will say, talking about the character of Bray, like, one of my favorite little small moments during the match was when the crowd was doing the Let's Go Cena, Cena Sucks back and forth, and Bray was kind of giving this look like, what about me?
Yeah.
like he gets the character, and I know that the IWC wants to turn this guy into a babyface, but I think that's a mistake because I think he plays such a great heel, and the WWE needs heels right now.
Yeah, and they don't even have to make him – I hate Shades of Grey booking, but what they do on commentary is pretty smart in that they say the Wyatt following. This guy, his gimmick is to brainwash people. people. So they can just kind of blame the crowd and say, well, they don't know any better. It's Bray Wyatt. He's the one who's brainwashing these people into following him. And as long as they play it that way, it really does make sense that this master of the mic, this manipulative, you know, sermon deliverer is able to get people on his side.
By the way, we skipped over Daniel Bryan.
Oh, yeah, we totally did.
Okay, we can go over that right now. That's right.
Like the WWE, Daniel Bryan was an afterthought.
I really do like, okay, we'll get into Daniel Bryan right now, but I will say that I think the fact that he's injured is a blessing in disguise because he gets to be the underdog again. And you saw what he was booked like when he was able-bodied and able to fight against Kane, which was a terrible choice in opponent. Now we're going right back to the authority wanting to take the title from him and being unfair. And this is making him even more of a babyface, as you saw in Chicago tonight, where he and Brie Bella faced off with Stephanie McMahon, the big decision being, will Daniel Bryan give up the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, or will his wife get fired? Will he allow his wife to get fired? Stephanie McMahon came out, and she guilt-tripped Daniel Bryan, saying, you know, one day if you and Brie have little weird bearded kids, will they want to look back and see that you were being selfish and you allowed your wife to be fired? And, you know, Daniel Bryan, as he was trying to plead his case, was interrupted by CM Punk chant, to which Stephanie McMahon said, look, Daniel, these people want you to quit just like CM Punk. And yes, she said CM Punk's name on the broadcast. So there you go. Daniel Bryan then called Stephanie manipulative and he searched for a word, and Brie Bella instituted bitch, to which the crowd popped huge. So now you're building up this crescendo. Stephanie McMahon gets impatient and tries to hurry the procedure, says, okay, just give me the title. And Daniel Bryan is teasing as if he's going to give her the championship. Brie Bella stands in front, says she's not going to be a helpless victim. You can't fire me because I quit. Crowd explodes and cheers. Stephanie McMahon seems very bemused by all this, continues her cackling and laughter, and Brie Bella slaps her right across the face to a huge pop. And Stephanie McMahon runs out. So what I took away from this segment is that you got as big of a reaction from a Daniel Bryan segment slash match as you would have, you know, if had he been wrestling. And WWE is playing this very smartly, stretching out the will he or won't he situation. And this was a home run in my eyes.
Yeah, I liked it, considering, you know, the circumstances they have with Bryan. And, you know, this sets up for maybe one day a Brie Bella Stephanie McMahon match for her job. So another SummerSlam possible match that we could see is these two. It's been a while since we've seen Stephanie in the ring, but she's still a workout freak. So I'm sure she's in great shape and could still go if she needs to.
Yeah, I like the segment, throwing logic out the window, because if this was real life, I'm sure Daniel Bryan would just be like, I make like 5 times what my wife makes, and I'm keeping this title because that makes me even more money. So screw you. Go ahead, go home, baby. Make me some vegan pancakes or something. But for what it was, I really enjoyed it. Stephanie is a great heel in this role. I'm still not sure. Has there been an update in terms of his physical condition?
They're expecting him back for, I believe, either Battleground, or he could be back by Money in the Bank, best case scenario.
Okay.
But how do we really know, though? Because, I mean, until they release something official, then I'm not buying anything that I read on the internet.
Yeah, we don't know. But yeah, there's been, the only number I've seen floated around is 2 to 3 month window. But I mean, you got to believe he's going to come back earlier than he should. I mean, I know it's a neck injury. I know you shouldn't. But if you're the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, there is an unwritten rule that if you can walk, you can work.
I hope he doesn't follow that philosophy, because
I hope so too.
As you've seen of Edge, that's not something to. I mean, we don't want Daniel Bryan to just show up on Raw one week and have to retire like Edge did because of neck issues. So if he needs time off, then either they need to get the title off of him or figure out another way to stretch this out even longer.
Right, and that's my point. You know, he's not Super Cena. He doesn't need to, even though he may feel some type of obligation to the company. His first obligation is in real life to himself and to his wife and to his family. And, you know, you don't want to just go for the short-term money, because he's somebody that the fans are behind. They're going to be behind in 3 months or 6 months. You know what I mean? And I think that he needs to do what's best for him and not what is quote unquote best for business. The title thing is interesting though, because let's say it's 3 months or 4 months, you know, you got to get that belt off of him. You got to have a tournament or do it at Money in the Bank or find some way to crown a new champion. And then, you know, you always have that story in your back pocket that Daniel Bryan never lost the belt. You know, he only had to give it up due to injury, and you've got a ready-made feud when he's 100% and ready to go.
This is Vince McMahon we're talking about. There's no such thing as 6 months with the WWE and Vince McMahon. And the number one obligation, while, yeah, it sounds very good, it's your friends, your family, blah, blah, blah. When you're working for Vince McMahon, when you're carrying his prize, your number one obligation is Vince McMahon. It is the inherent code of being the top champion. If Daniel Bryan legit just can't go, I'm sure he could work out a storyline where he's going to give. They've already exhausted the Daniel Bryan's going to give up the title picture. I think Daniel Bryan is holding on for this title, and I do think he's going to be back sooner than we think. I think at the very latest, it'll be at Battleground. I really hope they play out a situation where at Money in the Bank, the winner immediately challenges a gimpy Daniel Bryan for the title and wins. You know, Daniel Bryan maybe takes a bump. Who knows how they work that situation out. But then maybe that heats it up for the next pay-per-view. I just think that, you know, if but he was going to be out for a very, very long time. He would not, they would not be quote unquote dragging this on. And this isn't the type of thing they're going to drag on for 6 months. Otherwise you're going to, or, you know, for however long his neck injury persists, or they're going to lose the fans in my
eyes. He's saying Vince is like, I've lost $700 million in 3 months. You're getting back in there.
Exactly. That's one way of putting it. I'm not going to lose another dime because your neck is hurt. You remember Bruno?
Oh, but yeah, that slap on Stephanie was great, though. I will. That was one of the highlights of the pay-per-view for me.
I loved it in slow motion. They've got Stephanie with a smug smile on her face, and you could just slowly see as the slap goes across her face, she goes from smug to, like, completely shocked. She sold that very well. But speaking of girls who can sell, or women who can sell, we go to the Divas match, which was kind of in the come-down position. But they had a very intriguing character in Alicia Fox who took on Paige. Nothing too special about this match. Paige did get the victory over Alicia Fox with that scorpion cross lock that she likes to do. I guess it's now called the Paige Tap Out, which I hate that name. I mean, they couldn't come up with another pun. Paige retains the title. And Alicia Fox after the match. Now, this has been her gimmick, because when she wins or loses after the match, she goes crazy somehow. She goes to the announce table. She goes into the crowd. But, you know, the fans are really psyched up to see what is this girl going to do now that she's lost the Divas title match. She really didn't do anything. She just kept saying silence, and then she ran to the back. So I was very disappointed with that.
This match was dull. And the fans were pretty courteous, because the fans could have turned and started Let's Go Hawks or
JBL,
CM Punk or anything, but they just sat there and watched and didn't react either way. So, good on the Midwestern crowd for being nice to him.
You know why they did it though? Because Paige is like they're all fanboys for Paige.
Yeah, but they didn't cheer at all. They did once she came out. That was it. That was the last reaction we got from the fans until the match was over.
They were like, well, you know, we're not gonna screw up your match, but we're not gonna cheer for you either.
Yeah.
But, well, maybe they were just tired from all the spots seen in Bray Wyatt match, because that.
Did Vince cut his mic?
You lose Alfred?
You guys hear me?
Yeah, I thought Vince cut your mic there for a second.
Well, Vince would never do that to me. Vince loves me.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought the match was just there. I think Alicia Fox does a good job with this character, but I think this character is counterproductive to what they're trying to do, because the most entertaining part is seeing her go crazy after she loses. And like, what was it, Raw on the go-home show, she lost to Emma. And it's like, this is the person that you're trying to convince us is going to be a formidable challenge to your women's champion, but she's losing all the time. So it's backwards. I think Alicia's great with the character, but I don't think there's anybody in this division that people are interested in or enthused about. Maybe Paige and Natty, but really the only person that the fans would be interested in seeing Paige work against was in the United Center on Sunday night. And she ain't coming back anytime soon, I don't think.
Nobody knows when she's coming back. But that will be, if that is to happen, I think it would be a great return match. And I just think you got to give Paige time. But, and I'm with you, Nate. I don't think Alicia Fox should be the type of diva who's losing every week. It did help that she did beat Paige. But, you know, if you're going to build this character, you need to build her into a contender as well, so that Paige has somebody to chase. And maybe it'll be a good idea to get this title off Paige so she can build more of a sympathetic following as a babyface going after a title.
And that's my whole problem with Paige since she debuted. It's like, you know, I know if you watched NXT, like, you have a pretty good grasp on the character, but for somebody that hasn't seen a lot of NXT, it's like, give me some vignettes. Give me some storyline of why I should be behind this person, behind this character, other than, you know, she's this young 21-year-old underdog.
Right, they dropped the ball there. They should have at least, I mean, they don't even let her cut promos or anything. They just throw her out there like, hey, you know her from NXT. And like the majority of fans are like, no, we don't. So it's going to take some time. But a group that had a lot of time was The Shield, as they took on Evolution. At this point, I believe they started the match at like 7:20. I mean, I felt like this match went on forever. Yeah. But it was very good. It was one of those gang warfare type elimination matches. Triple H, early in this match, relatively early, took out Rollins as Rollins dove and the action spilled out to the crowd. And Triple H hit him with some type of foreign object. Couldn't really tell what it was. I don't know if it was a plate or something. He hit him and out goes Rollins. Shortly after that, Reigns gets smashed through the table by Evolution. Orton hits a signature Ambrose. So now the story is Evolution is out. And this match probably goes 20 minutes and there's no pinfalls or anything. And they're just trying to talk about how, well, The Shield is out, and Evolution is trying to end their careers. So Reigns gets dragged into the ring. They rip his shirt off, and they just go Django Unchained on him, just beating him with kendo sticks to no end, where his back is all slashed up. He tries fighting back, but they're just doing a number on him. They go to the outside toward the entrance. You know, Ambrose tries to up in there and save his buddy, but they beat him down too. Meanwhile, Rollins, who had been absent for a lot of this match, rises up on not the Titantron, but really the stage portion below it, and he makes this huge crazy dive on the entire Evolution stable, and the match is back on. They get back in the ring. Batista goes for a Batista bomb on Rollins, who gets out of it. Reigns hits a spear on Batista. Rollins makes a cover. Shortly after, there's a reverse DDT by Ambrose, which Orton for the pin. So now it's one. Orton comes out with a sledgehammer and gives it to Triple H, who uses it on Ambrose, but shortly after he's hit with a knee by Rollins and then speared, and Rollins makes a cover on Triple H. So The Shield wins the match. No issues for The Shield. A shutout. And I really think that this kind of tells us that this group is not going anywhere anytime soon, but we may get a Triple H versus Roman Reigns program in the distant future. I'm guessing at SummerSlam, because when these two are in the ring alone, the crowd exploded. So what did you think about the match, Marcus?
I didn't pay much attention because at this point, hockey was the priority over wrestling. So I was confused as to why they weren't going for the pin. Just the times I did look up, it looked like they had the advantage, Evolution that is, and I was surprised to see at the end when they got shut out, but yeah, it was, you know, it was fine. It was another match. All these rematches, after a while, it just became too repetitive. Not so much the outcome, but just the fact that we're seeing the same matches, and it's only been, what, 4 weeks now since we last saw them on pay-per-view? And that includes this match, which the first match was great, but there was no way they were going to top what they did in the first match tonight. And I think that really showed in this match, which was, it was fine, but it wasn't as good as the first match.
No, I don't think it was as good as the first match. Still, I think it might have been the match of the night. I don't know if that's more of an indictment of the rest of the card, but I enjoyed it. I was surprised. The only thing that surprised me, because I had The Shield going into the pay-per-view, but I was surprised that it was such a decisive victory with Evolution, you know, getting eliminated one after one. I thought it was cool, though. One of the things that the story that was going on was, like, every time the match went outside of the ring, Evolution had the upper hand, but as soon as it got in the ring, The Shield was like, you know, this is our yard. And right. I really think, like you mentioned, Reigns, this is maybe the first time that I think, I don't know though. I don't know. I was going to say Reigns came across as a guy that is ready for a singles run, but you got to remember the crowd that they're in front of. Because I think we saw this, what was it, the night after WrestleMania, when, you know, Roman Reigns had such a fervor behind him from the crowd, and then they go to Tuscaloosa or somewhere like that the next week, and they're like, yeah, we like you, but, you know, you ain't all that. So I think it'd be very smart of them to keep these guys together as a unit. I think the breakup, they can save that for a while, because I think there's a lot more to be gained from each of the guys individually as well as collectively by remaining together and remaining baby faces. I'm high on the Shield right now. They're probably the best booked unit in the WWE, including the world champion, including the Wyatts. And, you know, I guess Batista's out, but I don't know where this leaves Randy Orton. Like, do you go into a program with him and Ambrose, or him and Rollins, or what?
Well, first of all, what was Batista wearing tonight? He didn't get the memo that we're wearing black, not blue. He's just a troll.
He was trying to pimp his movie.
I don't know what he's trying to do.
I had no problem. You know, Batista, he can do no right with WWE fans. And everybody had something smart to say about Blue Tista, which is number one trend worldwide. But, I mean, he could come out and announce that he's fed 1 million poor children, and people would troll him because he called children poor. Like, the guy, anything he does gets crucified on Twitter. And
but it was blatantly obvious that he was totally – I mean, how do you go from black outfit to like this funky, like,
you look like Mega Man.
Not even a regular blue, it was like Mega Man blue.
I mean, the Shield, they have a dress code. You know, you're wearing your SWAT gear, it's their gimmick. Evolution, you know, there's really no official dress code. They just wear what they wear. There's no team jerseys or anything like that. They're supposed to be wearing suits when they're off, you know, when they're not wrestling, but they haven't been doing that. So I didn't have a problem with this.
Or if you're gonna wear blue, then at least have someone else wear trunks with color, so it's not so obvious that he just stood out, and he brings it on himself, and I'm sure he does it on purpose. I'm sure he enjoys doing this. It just looked weird. But yeah, I don't know, maybe he's finally gonna take this break. I don't know. I've lost track of people telling me, or the internet telling us, that he's going to be written off TV. So when it happens, it happens. But until then, he's still around.
Well, maybe Hunter ribbed him. That's my theory. Maybe Hunter was like, look here, Dave. We're going to be wearing Mega Man blue tonight, so I want you to have your blue tights and your blue elbow pads. We're going to wear that to the ring. And then when Dave shows up, he's like, you were supposed to be my friend. Why? Got me looking like a jackass out here.
I thought he looked very tasteful. I liked how the blue flowed together. He was very coordinated with the armbands and the knee pads and the Air Jordans, which I've always been a big Air Jordan guy. I have no problem.
That's another thing. Why does he wrestle in J's? But I'm sure Hogan approves of that.
Yeah, I like them J's, brother. Is that the Series 7s or the 8s?
overall, I mean, I thought it was a good pay-per-view. I don't think it was, you know, a lot of people were down on it, and the talk going into it was NXT TakeOver was drawing more excitement than Payback, but I really do think that they were reacting to how good that show was, and it elevated, because we saw a lot of rematches. All the matches were rematches of some sort, but they did give us something different in the big matches, which was Shield and Evolution, as well as the Cena Wyatt match, I thought were the good matches, which they had to be in order for this pay-per-view to be okay. So I would give this a thumbs up. What do you guys think, starting with Marcus?
Thumbs down. It did nothing for me. It's one of those shows that I would only watch because it's on the network and it's free. Well, not free, but, you know, I've already paid for it. So it's there to watch. But otherwise, I wouldn't go out of my way to watch this show. There was nothing special. I am intrigued about Raw because it did leave a lot of questions coming out of tonight as where they go with not only Evolution, but with Cena. So that's intriguing, at least. But otherwise, I thumbs down.
Yeah, I'll go thumbs in the middle. This is like a 5 out of 10, maybe 6 out of 10 show for me. I think part of it is, like we mentioned, you know, the rematches. It just didn't have that buzz to it. Like, there wasn't a can't-miss match on this show, I don't think. You know, there were some good matches on the show. I really liked the main event. I thought the Wyatt-Cena match was better than the one at Extreme Rules. And I even liked the pre-show, you know, with the midgets, the little people. But you know, there was nothing here that if you said, Nate, you missed the Shield beating Evolution, or you missed Bad News Barrett beating RVD. It's like, okay, cool. I'll read the results. I'll go check out the matches online somewhere. You know, there was nothing here that was a must see for me. And you know, I think that's the problem that they run into with these B or C level pay-per-views.
And I think TakeOver was the opposite, because I think there's matches on TakeOver that you would go out of your way to watch if you didn't see the show.
Absolutely. Let's get into that. We mentioned TakeOver being more excited than Payback. I mean, that was the feeling going into it. And then after seeing two shows, I think we can all agree that TakeOver was a better show. And it just had a series of great matches. Not only great matches, but I thought they did a good job of character development. Before every match, almost every match, you would see kind of a spotlight on everybody, who they are, why they're fighting for, what they're fighting for, and you know where they're going. And I thought it was just a great show overall. Let's go over what you thought your favorite matches was. Marcus, what was your favorite match and your takeaway from Payback or from TakeOver?
Favorite match was probably Tyler Breeze, Sami Zayn. Breeze showed a lot in that match. That's the first time he's really had a chance to showcase how good he is in the ring. You know, in the past, he's just been a character, a gimmick. But he really got to show, you know, how good he is in the ring and how much he can work. And, you know, same situation with Sami when he lost to Cesaro. He's someone in NXT who can lose and still be strong. And in this case, it doesn't really hurt him that he lost this match to Tyler Breeze. It probably helped Breeze a lot more than it would Sami winning. So that match really stood out to me.
Yeah, for me, first of all, I kind of wish we had a break so when we came back we could be like, we're talking TakeOver, the break's over. But that's just
no break was needed for that.
No, but hey. I'm always working on these segues, brother. That's what I do. But I have to say, I think I like TakeOver more than Arrival. It's close, though, because I really did like Arrival.
Yes.
But, like, I just start with the bad. Like, I hate the Ascension. I really do.
Yeah!
Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not into them at all, but, you know, it is what it is. I thought Neville and Kidd was pretty cool. Breeze and Zayn was a good match as well. But my favorite would probably be, and this is kind of the opposite of the Paige and Alicia Fox match, where you had two girls in there that you really didn't care about. I like the Charlotte and Natalya match. That was probably my favorite.
Love that match.
Because it told a story. You had that great video with Ric Flair talking about, you know, Charlotte's going to continue the legacy, and then Bret Hart, like, oh, a Flair will never beat a Hart. And I really liked, you know, they work well together. And it's crazy because on the main roster, Natty's kind of a joke. And what, like the last time we saw her, she got beat by one of the Bellas, and they were doing that deal with that painting she made on Total Divas. But in NXT, she's like a respected veteran and a badass. And I really enjoyed the combination between the two of them, man. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with Charlotte, because I think, was it the BFFs? Is that her little group?
Yeah.
Yes.
I really liked them. I really liked them. I think they got personality and character. And, you know, that, like you said, there's some things that are appointment viewing and some things that you can be like, yeah, I'll catch up with it a week later. And I'm not saying that NXT is appointment viewing for me yet, because there's another show that I have allegiance to on Thursday nights. But it's getting there.
Well, when Impact ends, you can switch over to – and when I mean end, I mean folds for good. Then you can switch over and watch NXT.
Yes. I may only have to wait until October.
I love the pay-per-view. I went back to talk about appointment viewing. I just wanted to see how Natalya match, which I found the show. But, you know, I ended up watching the whole entire thing again. And I will go out on a limb. I gave myself time to react to this because I thought it was a phenomenal match when I saw it, but I wanted to sit in the 24-hour room. I thought it was better than any match I saw in WrestleMania. I thought Charlotte and Fair, and that's not an indictment on WrestleMania. I thought WrestleMania was a very good card. They had a lot of good matches, but Charlotte and Natalya was incredible. So they did like three or four spots there that I had really never seen, not only from Divas, but never seen in the WWE. And I just thought that transition toward the end with the sharpshooter and the figure four and they go to the outside, it was just brilliant. And what stood out about that match is you got Nature Boy Ric Flair, 16-time world champion, arguably the greatest in-ring talent of all time, standing at his heart, 7-time world champion, one of the greatest performers in the history of WWE, and they were in the background. Like, the people were not – after that match got started, the stars were in the ring. People were not distracted by Ric Flair. They weren't distracted by Bret Hart. They were captivated by what was going on in the ring. And my hat's off to him because I thought it was an incredible match.
You mean like a better technical match than anything in WrestleMania or – in general.
I would say technical. I would definitely say technically sound. It was a very, I mean, they did have early in the match, I thought there was a couple of miscues, but I thought other than that, it was a very flawless match. I thought it was from start to finish storyline. The crowd was into it. And I know you get the benefit of being in a small arena, so it sounds louder than it really should be, but I don't think you're going to look back at WrestleMania and say, oh, you're going to look back at WrestleMania and say, oh, remember when The Undertaker lost? Okay, Daniel Bryan and Triple H is the best match on that show, but I don't think it's like one of these iconic matches we're going to remember for years to come. I think Charlotte and Natalya, as time goes on, especially with this sort of the of NXT, it's going to be one of those, wow, launching points for Charlotte.
I still think Triple H Bryan was better. I mean, considering the story they were telling, and the atmosphere of that crowd compared to NXT. And it's not on them, it's just the way the cookie crumbled. But I understand where you're coming from about the women's match.
Yeah, I'd agree with Marcus on that point. But I will say that, you know, the great thing about the Charlotte and Natalya match that most Divas matches and most Knockout matches lack these days is there was psychology. And, you know, having Brett and Rick there at ringside, that just added to it and made it seem important. And not only made it seem important, but they gave it time. It was like 15, 16 minutes?
16 minutes.
They gave, you know, they
almost 17
minutes. Yeah, they gave it time to breathe, which, you know, how many times have we seen women's matches or title matches in general that are like 5 minutes, 7 minutes? You know, I think just the extra time that was given to it made it seem like this is a big deal and I should be watching this. So I think, like I said, I'm not sure which one I like better. I think right now I'll give TakeOver the slight edge over Arrival, but I think both of these NXT specials have been pretty good.
Did she make the complete babyface turn? That's what I got in that match. Between
Charlotte?
What happened in the ring,
yeah, yeah,
and
then
what happened
crying.
On the post-fight or post-press conference. She seemed pretty babyface. She was out. But, well, both her and Natty were out, and they hugged again. And, you know, basically it was Charlotte saying, you know, if you want a rematch, you can have it. It was – she wasn't acting – I mean, considering her character before this week, it wasn't anything like what we've seen in the past with Charlotte. So that's why I was confused as to which direction they were going with her, because there was no mention of the BFFs. Of Sasha Banks, anything like that. So it felt like she was trying to make the turn to babyface.
Oh, I could see that. I mean, I felt like it was a one-off just based on what I saw on the show, is that you got these two legendary families in the ring, so they're just kind of showing each other respect. And Ric Flair was out there, so you kind of have to tweet babyface, you know, kind of like they do when they're in, like, a really smart territory. Sometimes a babyface has to play heel and vice versa. But I could see a situation because they were really teasing a split between Charlotte and I believe it was Alexa Bliss, because she made her way up the ranks and lost in the finals. And I think now she can make a case saying, I'm next in line, and, you know, you're here, you are crying with your dad, like, what happened to you? I thought we were friends. You can easily make that split. And I could see Charlotte becoming a babyface off this, because she really can work. She's made leaps and bounds off of what I know to be a very limited wrestling experience.
I forgot who said it. It was probably John or Way, but she really is like the female Brock Lesnar in terms of just like talent and just like freakish athletic ability. I don't know how tall she is, but there's stuff that she does in the ring that I haven't seen any woman do ever before. And it's pretty impressive for her to be still, you know, learning how to wrestle at this point.
I think she's got good genes, good drunken championship level genes.
But we've seen flares in the past who have not been impressive at all in the ring.
Don't you besmirch the work of David Flair.
It's not impressive?
Not so much.
Don't you dare talk about David Flair's great run in WCW.
No, he couldn't run. He blew up before he could really get into a
Oh, poor David Flair.
Oh, that was brutal.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's spin it forward. You know, there's a lot of open-ended. I mean, a lot of these feuds seem to have come to an end in my eyes. Bray Wyatt, John Cena at the end. Evolution, they can't really get another rematch. They've perished, as Triple H says. So let's just spin it forward as to what you see for the top talents or main event for next month. How you see things shaking down now that WWE is in full-on reset mode, starting with Nate.
Oh, Payback to me was a pretty predictable show. As a matter of fact, I went 7-0 with my predictions, excluding the matches that were made on the fly. But yeah, I was pretty surprised myself. I was like, okay, so the outcomes are predictable. I think the big question is what they do with the world title, because if it stays on Bryan, they've got to have some heels ready for when he returns. And right now, I guess Bray Wyatt and Cesaro would be the best choices. I think Bray's a guy that still is over regardless of the loss tonight. And, they just need to get him away from John Cena. Maybe he can, he can spin it for because he's a delusional heel that he defeated one of the WWE's greatest heroes, and now he's going to go after another hero in Daniel Bryan, and that they can spin off into that feud. Bad News Barrett, I think eventually he's going to be a babyface. Sheamus eventually is going to be a heel. I don't know what you do. The Rhodes Brothers, I guess they got a feud. And the only other thing that stood out for me on this show was, like you talked about earlier, maybe they're going through this humbling period with Big E, which to me is just counterproductive. I've never understood why the WWE does things like this, because they're turning away money, and they may do something with him 6 months from now, but they need all hands on deck right now, especially with CM Punk at the United Center and Daniel Bryan, convalescing.
Yeah. At the top, I think we'll obviously have the Money in the Bank match. I think that'll help put some of these guys into feuds because they'll be tied up with a match. So, we usually get, six wrestlers in this match, six or eight?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah, eight. It's usually eight.
Yeah, so that's going to help them at least find something for these guys to do, whether it's going to be – whether they get there from a tournament or match. I'm sure the matches will start tomorrow on Raw for people trying to get a spot and Money in the Bank. So that'll help at least. It wouldn't surprise me if someone like a Jericho returned just to sort of help make the transition. Not the transition, but at least – kill the time before Bryan is healthy and ready to go.
As a baby face?
He's got to come back as a baby face. That's his thing. He comes back as a baby face, and then a week later he'll turn heel. So he'll start a baby face.
Come out with his shiny-ass jacket.
Yeah. And I would like to see some kind of number one contender match. Because I don't want to – when Bryan is healthy, I don't want them to go back to Kane. So I would like to see a match that – for the people who are not involved in the Money in the Bank match, or whether it's Cena or Wyatt or whoever's left, to be involved in a number one contender match. And then hopefully by Battleground, Bryan is ready to go and to compete.
Yeah, I just feel like Roman Reigns is the guy. I know that we get into this trap where somebody seems like they're on their way to being a top star and then they fall off a cliff. But what I think separates Roman Reigns is you can always tell when Triple H is grooming somebody to be a star, because he goes in there and he personally works with them. And because he has a lot of influence, he knows how to make somebody look like $1 million. And that's what he's been doing with Roman Reigns. Now, what scares me about Roman Reigns is you see they've really cut back on his promo time, because he had this terrible promo a few weeks back on Raw. Since then, he went on commentary, didn't really... This past week, he cut the shortest promo of the three, just kind of saying, I want to fight. So they've really got to work on that and continue to hide him in the Shield. But I would venture to guess that by SummerSlam, Roman Reigns is, I think, on his own and a top star.
Yeah. I don't get why he has to be, even if he's wrestling Triple H singles match, I don't get why he has to separate from the group to do that.
No, he doesn't have to separate from them from all. But if you're trying to create a star, you don't want him just flanking around with the Shield all the time.
Mm.
And I mean, August is, that's quite a lengthy run. If the Shield is still together by this SummerSlam, what is that? Two SummerSlams that they've been, like, the 2 years that they've been rolling together? Like, that's – any time they do a split would be like, okay, well, that was a great run. And I think eventually, sooner or later, you've got to figure out whether or not Roman Reigns, if you throw him out on his own, can fly or sink. I mean, the longer they keep him in the group and hedge their bets, the less like, – the more he's just going to be associated with the Shield. It's like playing a TV character for so long, and then you can't get a movie gig because, like, you're not gold.
But from a logic standpoint, if you have him become a single star, then you have to at least explain why he's splitting up from the Shield. And if that's the case, then that's going to prevent him from getting to Triple H in theory, right? Because you have to, you know, it's not going to be a clean breakup. So that's going to occupy Roman Reigns in theory with another feud before he gets to Triple H.
That could be the TV feud, though, and it doesn't necessarily – it could be a babyface that breakup, like, hey, I need to go do my own thing. They could easily do that. I know they would give up, you know, a potential program with the Shield fighting each other, but it could be as easy as having the Shield and Roman Reigns be the TV feud that sets up Triple H and Roman Reigns, because now Triple H can take over that leader position and have, you know, Rollins and Ambrose be his two flunkies, and then that's part of the feud. They could easily integrate Triple H in that feud. I think there's ways that – they could make Triple H and Roman Reigns being the principals, and then Rollins and Ambrose would still have a spot. And that would even make them elevated if they're to be in Reigns' main event spotlight. So not only are you breaking up the Shield, you're making three new stars instead of just one new star.
You give them too much credit to book this thing.
Yeah.
That's cute. Real cute.
I'm trying.
you try too hard.
I was gonna say, man, like, yeah, I think it would not surprise me if the Shield was still a unit at SummerSlam.
No, it wouldn't surprise me at all either. I just think that if the big money match is Triple H and Roman Reigns, it's like that's kind of the writing is on the wall that if you're headlining a Big Four pay per view, really shouldn't be in a group if you're a babyface. I mean, groups for top stars, I think, is a heelish type thing to do if you really want to build up a heel. If you're a babyface, you break away if they want to elevate you from the top star. That's just how it's usually been.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, you know, this WWE, anything can happen, as they always say. They could go back to a Shield Wyatt feud.
Oh, please no.
I mean, it. I don't want to see it, but they could very well say that's fans were excited about that once upon a time. Let's go back to that. Because I feel they're almost in a scramble mode right now.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing. What do they do with the Wyatts or Bray Wyatt? Like, where – I think anything they do with him, they can easily have an explanation. They can come up with something creatively because the Bray Wyatt character is just so easy to book, I think. But what does he do? He's – with John Cena, there's nowhere to go but down.
Yeah.
Unless you feud for the top title. So they really need to be careful as – to how they book him from here on out.
You know what would have been a great feud with a guy that I think fans would have bought as a better babyface than John Cena, and also a guy that, you know, you could have realistically, in the three-match setup, given Bray Wyatt the two wins to one advantage and really put Bray Wyatt over? That man called Sting. Like, can you imagine? I'm serious. Can you imagine if they did the same program? I'm going to destroy your heroes with a guy that is actually a hero, because John Cena is not a hero.
No, John Cena is a hero to the WWE. Sting is a nobody to WWE. You're running a big risk of having these kids go like, who's his old man daddy? Like, he's not a hero.
That's why you have to educate the audience.
We just mentioned with Paige, they don't do a good job of doing that. So why would you think they would do something with Sting when they don't do something with their current talent? Once again, you give them too much credit here.
With live audiences, you do get a lot of the snarky fans, the male fans. That's why you're always going to hear Cena sucks chants. That's the portion of the crowd that I think would pop for Sting. They're all outer type. So I think you could make Sting's return a big deal. Now, Sting versus Bray Wyatt, I think, would make perfect sense, especially now that The Undertaker is out. But I just think getting there, WWE would know what to do. And I just couldn't see it happening in the realm of reality and WWE's booking. But if you write that on paper, like that, I mean, where is Bray Wyatt going to go? He's going to look minor league no matter what he does because he's feuded with John Cena for 3 months. So they need to be careful.
Money in the bank.
Yeah, they can do that.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, I was going to say, outside of Sting, which I have no faith that they would do properly, because, but I do think those characters work well together.
I don't think he has a contract yet. So what? If he hasn't signed by yet, then what is he waiting for?
And yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's really any incentive other than the money, because the match that he was coming in for is probably not going to happen now.
No, it shouldn't happen.
And the only other match I think that could be interesting is Bray Wyatt, maybe John Cena, but those are the only two.
Yeah.
But in terms of Bray Wyatt, the only other match I'm interested in seeing him in is with Daniel Bryan. And I guess the only way you can get there is by having Bray win the Money in the Bank.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If he keeps talking about wanting to be a god, and there's one way to be a god in the realms of WWE is you win that title, because the Bray Wyatt character doesn't want competitive glory. He's not a competitor. He's not a warrior who wants to work hard and work his way to the top. He just wants power. He wants control. And that's the way that they can explain him going after the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
I thought you were going to say beat JBL. To be a wrestling god, you have to beat a wrestling god.
A god.
Hold my hat, Michael.
Let me go do a job, Michael. I'll be right back.
Was that last week on Raw when JBL got involved in the Wyatt feud?
It was this past week, yes.
Yeah, when they took him out. Yeah, like I know it's not going to happen, but yeah, for a one off, I'd kind of be interested in Bray and JBL.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know that they would do Bray and Jerry Lawler if this was before he ever had a heart attack. But I wouldn't be surprised if JBL came out of retirement for a one off against Bray.
He's not wrestling, man.
He doesn't have to wrestle. He just takes a bump and takes a pinfall. He could just stand in the ring and take the Sister Abigail. Kiss on the head.
You do his Royal Rumble spot.
Exactly. Get in the ring and take the job and then go, you know, maybe they'll have an excuse to bring back on.
And then what?
And then, you know, Bray Wyatt has got some heat. He's beating somebody that everybody cares about. I'm just gotta book the shot somehow. You can't just keep him out there and Jesus like have Bray Wyatt cut promo for the rest of his life.
You guys are just pulling shit out your ass now.
So yeah, so I guess we're qualified to work in WWE creative.
You are. You graduated from TNA.
Yes.
What the WWE roster can Bray Wyatt like just on a throwaway TV match have a match against and people care? Not very many of them. The roster is very thin. So if you just throw out JBL based on what happened the week before. Especially if Bray Wyatt eggs him on. Then
you'd be the first person to shit on a 25-second squash match with JBL at a pay-per-view.
I wouldn't. Not at who the hell said anything about pay-per-view? No, nobody's paying money to see that. I'm saying
but why would you waste a quote-unquote JBL return on Raw?
It's just JBL's at the point of his career where we've seen enough out of wrestling. It's like saying a Jerry Lawler return. Yeah, in his day, he was the king of Memphis, which was arguably the hottest territory in wrestling. But now, if he is to wrestle, it can be given away on free TV easily. And before he had a heart attack, that's what they used to do. Is he was like the punching bag.
But I think now that Lawler and JBL are two different. I mean, Lawler is he's old as shit. Even before the heart attack, he was old. You know, I think JBL is while he's older, he's still fresh enough in people's minds that you would think if he was going to, quote-unquote, come back, that it would be bigger than a second hour of Raw. You know, it seems like it should be built up more.
His legacy is like the longest reigning champion in SmackDown history. That's like being his legacy of being the two-time CFL world champion. Like, he's really not a legend. He's in the realms of WWE, he's a Hall of Famer and whatnot. But the fact that his commentary career, I think, is now starting to parallel what he did in the ring to where when it's all said and done, we're going to remember him more as a commentator. I think that takes away from his wrestling credibility and him being this big draw that is going to come back for a huge match. I think that's a guy who could take off wearing a shirt and tie and, you know, they'll give him crap about it on the JBL and Cole show. I don't think he'd have a problem doing that.
I mean, that just seems like a waste to do that. And then, okay, that's what, who's going to get revenge for JBL? No one. I don't know.
And then that'll just make Bray Wyatt more of a heel, and then you'll want to see him get beat more because
Ron Simmons comes back.
He does. Damn.
Yeah, I mean, this is a, you know, we're getting a little bit silly, but if this is
Barry. When can we move about talking about TNA? Let's move on to TNA.
I was gonna say, but this is, before we get to some big TNA news, this is a legit issue that the WWE has with this Bray Wyatt character. I think in a way they booked themselves into maybe not a corner, but it's a cul-de-sac, and they got to figure out a way to turn it around and get him in there with somebody that the fans are invested in. And the
Here's
only
the
guy,
solution.
The only guy is Daniel Bryan.
Let's watch the TV and see what happens. That's a theory. Let's just see what they do with him. Before we sit here and overanalyze what the hell they're doing with Bray Wyatt.
What the hell are we doing here? Hey, welcome to the Kings of Sport. Hey, we're just going to watch the show.
Yeah, but at some point, we just got to move on. We've been beating this to a drum about, oh my God, Bray Wyatt, what are we going to do? Let's just see what happens.
I think JBL and Bray Wyatt is imminent. But speaking of imminent.
Let's go on.
MVP... having a match against Eric Young. Nate, do you want to fill us in on what happened with your boy?
Yeah, let's talk about a real heel, folks. A real heel that makes you feel passionate about who he's facing. And that is one Montel Vontavious Porter, MVP, who was at a wrestling event in the UK over the weekend, and he suffered a knee injury. It took place during a tag team match, and MVP said he felt his knee pop. And I guess... The x-rays are inconclusive, and he may have to undergo an MRI. And he's scheduled to face Eric Young, as we mentioned, at Slammiversary in 2 weeks. And
yeah, that's right.
And it's unknown at this time whether or not the injury will put the bout in jeopardy. And again, you know, this is something that is a big blow for TNA. I know there's some people out there that are like, you know, nobody really matters in TNA. But if you watch the programming, MVP to me has been one of the best things in wrestling over the past couple months, just in terms of playing a heel character that is not interested in being cool to the fans. His promos are solid. His in-ring work is still solid. The group Negro Lucian, they're solid. Sure. You know, I think, you know, this is probably the one thing that TNA has done right, you know, in a while in terms of this group and Eric Young, and not having MVP at Slammiversary, that's a big blow.
Not the best of news for TNA. I did see the joke that, you know, TNA is copying WWE when it comes to injured top faces or top people in the company. But if he can't wrestle, I guess Lashley is the guy you want to go with as plan B. But if that's the case, then I would make that the main event, would you?
No, I wouldn't, you know, just, I guess, and you, I don't think you can make Bully EC3 the main event either. Yeah. That's the problem, like the,
yeah, well,
there's not really a match that I think they can substitute that would be, you know, a headlining quote unquote match.
By the way, speaking of MVP, he tweeted this a few hours ago. I love how these piss ant wrestling rumor sites twist words in a sad attempt for hits. So, see that as it is.
I love it too. But I think it sounds, I mean, most knee injuries you don't recover in 2 weeks. And it sounds like MVP may be able to gut it out. But I do think you really should put the World Heavyweight Championship in the main event. Even if MVP can't go, you find a replacement. Because Eric Young needs all the support he could get as this underdog champion, and it's just like a full-on effort, because it'll get to the point where he's going to hurt that title, because he's way too easily associated with that comedy character. So I think you just got to keep whatever the championship match is in the main event, even if it's something that you got to do bait and switch.
Well, this would probably be the only time I think that having one of those typical TNA overbooked finishes might be the way to go, in terms of a lot of interference by the by Kenny King and Bobby Lashley in order to protect MVP. Because I think at the end of the day, Lashley would be a good, you know, kind of a bridge right there. But the belt's got to go to MVP. That's the story. And I think, you know, if he can get through this, he's got a month before, you know, he doesn't have to wrestle. But knowing TNA, they'd be stupid and put him on Impact Wrestling the very next week. But in theory, he'd have a month off in between shows and
Nah, he would have a week.
A week?
Yeah, the New York tapings are coming up right after.
I'm talking about just in terms of being active in the ring. Like, he could cut a promo in New York, but he doesn't have to be in the ring wrestling.
No, anymore. He's out of wrestle. They're taping like 6 weeks of, or how many weeks of television are taping?
I think it's 5 weeks.
5 weeks. He has to wrestle at some point because otherwise he's off TV until middle of August. So you run the risk of having a Daniel Bryan situation all over again where unless they explain he has an injury and he still overcame that to beat Eric Young, but he's out of wrestle on that
show. Yeah, I don't think they can say that about the injury because they're not almost baby faces to an extent.
But I don't see him winning, though.
I think what they can do, because Samoa Joe just came back, you've got Eric Young, you've got Austin Aries, you've got Bobby Roode, you've got a lot of baby faces that have grudges with MVP, and let's say he can't work for 4 weeks. And so that would, you know, eliminate him from wrestling on those New York tapings. You have a tournament for a number one contender. Because the pay-per-views would be 2 weeks after that New York that last New York show aired, right?
Now, let me find the dates. They have tapings before they get to New York.
Yeah, they go to Pennsylvania first, I think.
There's a way to heal him out by keeping him as an injured mouthpiece as well. I mean, that kind of fits being a leader of a group is you put him in a wheelchair and you have him cut all kinds of promos.
And he is in storyline. He's the director of wrestling operations. So he could say, I'm not defending my title right now.
So they tape June 19th and 20th.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that's going to be at least
a couple weeks.
Yeah. At least 4 weeks. What's and then program? They tape June 25th to the 27th. And they don't tape again until August 5th. So you figure those five dates will at least get you through August 5th.
Yeah, I mean, they could do something with like a number one contenders tournament or have Kenny King and Lashley running interference or just, you know, have them say, I'm the director of wrestling operations and I don't feel like defending my title tonight. I think there's a way they can get around it. It's not the best solution, but I think it's better to have MVP hold the title than to put it on Lashley and then somehow transfer it to MVP.
But doesn't that just kill Eric Young if he can't beat a crippled MVP?
Not if there's a lot of outside interference.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you can
just... But, I mean, let's just assume his knee is legit damaged. Like, A... Since TV's already taped, like, you can't explain what happened. And B, if he literally is injured and has to limp to the ring, I guess you'd always shoot Angel the night of, but who would attack MVP in the back? But I don't know. It just seems like it'd be really just killing Eric Young if you had this guy limp to the ring. And even if it was 3-1, it still get beat. And that was it.
I think there's a way to work it. It's not a perfect, ideal situation, but there's a way to work it. And the other thing is, I don't think, you know, as good as Eric Young has been, and he's really stepped up in a position that may have been a little bit above his head. He's really worked hard, but he's not the guy. I don't know if Aries is the guy or Roode is the guy or Samoa Joe is the guy, but
there are no guys in TNA.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know.
It doesn't matter who the champ is.
Right. I think that, well, MVP is the only guy I think that makes a difference because he's a credible heel, whereas I don't think they're going to do what they did with Magnus with MVP. Where they cut Magnus's legs out from under.
But I mean, when you say make a difference, like no one's tuning in to watch MVP win the title or defend the title. I don't see where the impact is on MVP or anyone winning the title at this point in TNA.
From a buy rate standpoint, nobody makes a difference. Not even Jeff Hardy, aka Willow. But I think from a storyline perspective, MVP is the one guy that's like, I want to check out what this guy's going to say. I want to check out what this guy's going to do. Him and Bully Ray, to me, are the only two guys that consistently are, quote-unquote, entertaining on that program. Everyone else has up weeks and down weeks, but MVP is always in there putting in work, and Bully Ray is always in there putting in work, despite the storyline.
But if you want to talk about making a guy, I know it would hurt Eric Young to just drop the title so suddenly. The case of this will be good for his character, and as far as taking him seriously, is a guy who's able to be a sympathetic underdog and finally conquer the big bad stable. I think that would be a perfectly formidable storyline for a guy like Eric Young if they want to rehab his image.
I'm just glad we're talking about TNA. Even if it had to take an MVP injury.
Don't relish in it too much. Yeah, it does take a big storyline. Maybe we should work some TNA chat in there a little bit just to balance the discussion.
Oh, yes, yes. But, yeah, MVP has been, to me, he's been a breath of fresh air, even if the company is still on an oxygen tank. He's been the one guy week in and week out. It's like, this guy is just good. Like, he's just a consummate performer. He's not the best worker in the ring, but he's solid. He's got a grasp of his character. He doesn't feel scripted. He's like when he did the Donald Sterling thing a few weeks ago, or when he came out and he was like, "I want to bring out my friends Lashley and Kenny King on to get in on this beatdown because it ain't no fun if the homies can't get some." Like it's nobody else in TNA or even the WWE, I think, can get away with just having that type of. I think Bray Wyatt and MVP. Are the guys in terms of they bring their own self into their characters and they infuse it. And, as woeful as TNA is, I think MVP has been kind of one of the lone bright shining lights over the past 3 or 4 months.
Let's say his knee's really messed up and he did damage to it. How would you explain that on television?
Samoa Joe. That would be my out.
You have him attack him.
Yeah, he's a crazy wild man. That Samoa Joe couldn't wait for his shot, and he attacked MVP, and now MVP's hurt. And because Samoa Joe hurt MVP, MVP's going to be a dick. And he's like, well, because of that, Samoa Joe has to go through King and Lashley and all this other bullshit.
Okay.
I have no problem with that.
I mean, and it gets heat on Samoa Joe, who, if you saw Impact this past week, that was the least eventful return ever. Like, they're just beating down Eric Young, then all of a sudden they hit the Samoa Joe music, which for TNA, like, TNA doesn't have a whole lot of theme songs that right off the bat.
Samoa Joe's one of them.
Yeah, Samoa Joe is one of them. He's got that almost sounds like the Pharaoh Monch, Simon Says almost. And it's like the crowd in there, they're just like, hey, what's up, Joe? It was no excitement at all on that run in or jog in, because Joe ain't really running these days.
Yeah, I'm glad they're getting out of Orlando, because that crowd seems to be an issue, well, more of an issue than usual.
Yeah, the New York crowd intrigues me because
Oh, it should scare you.
And the Pennsylvania, too. Like people are kind of overlooking Pennsylvania. That's not the most friendly confines for a promotion like TNA either.
Have you been to Bethlehem? Don't worry, they're fine. No one from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is going to start a fuck TNA chant.
It'll be a little bit nicer. It'll be like,
I disapprove of TNA.
Yeah, I disapprove of this match and this booking. But yeah, New York should be interesting, because I think they'll get some leeway with that first taping. But if the first taping is crap, it's going to be, what, 5 more tapings of a hostile crowd?
Do you think they sell out the Manhattan Center?
Ooh, what's the capacity?
1,200.
Yes.
They should.
They're only halfway there. That's what I read today. And I guess TNA is all upset because they feel like people from TNA or former TNA employees are leaking bad information. But if you go to Ticketmaster.com, you can see literally every open seat that's available and every seat that's been bought, and all of the ringside seats, I would say, that are like 4 rows back are all sold. But there are tons of open seats the further back you get on the lower level. And then you remember how they have the balcony upstairs?
Yeah.
Those are mostly wide open as well. So, this is like the first night. The first night looks to be halfway sold at this point.
I'd say they'll probably sell, I'd say at least 70% of the house, and then they may have to paper the rest. But I think that's something that if you're TNA, you want to go ahead and do that, because you want that building to be packed so it can come across on TV as this is a big deal. Even if the crowd turns on them.
Yeah.
Friday show's a lot better.
Like I think there's certain people on that show that are going to be really over, though. Like, I think Bully Ray is going to be extremely over.
All the WWE guys?
Yeah, MVP, Kurt Angle, everybody except for Jeff Hardy, because that Willow thing is not going to get over anywhere.
All right, so actually the third taping is doing the best in terms of ticket sales, and that's a Friday. That's probably why.
Yeah, Friday.
The Wednesday, Thursday shows are both plenty of seats available.
I mean, yeah, wrestling on Wednesday is kind of a tough sell. Middle of the work week.
And these seats aren't cheap. I mean, the ringside starts at $95. But your cheapest seat is $30, and that's upstairs in the balcony. So maybe that's an issue for people.
So real quick, do you think we get the Dixie table spot? Do you think they use it at Slammiversary, or do they save it for the Spike tapings in New York? Or if they can get it by Spike?
I say neither. She doesn't go through a table.
You think she's not going to go through a table?
No.
I think it's going to be at Slammiversary.
Yeah, I think she's got to go through a table, and I'd love it if it was in New York, because I think that would be like one of the few things that that crowd would go crazy for, but knowing Spike, they may not give him the go-ahead on that, so it'd have to be a Slammiversary. Like, you got to get rid of Dixie. There's no reason to have two heel authority figures.
Yeah.
Good luck, TNA.
That was a solid. That was like a tight 20 minutes on TNA. I like that.
15 minutes too much, but what can you do?
Hey, Negro Lucian is a mystery.
I like MLK. I like that was Pollock.
Oh yeah, Pollock. Yeah, MLK. Yeah, that's a pretty good name for the group. MLK. That's the one thing I have been kind of surprised with, though. They haven't gone racial with it.
Like, it's probably for the best.
Yeah, the race thing has been severely downplayed. Like, the only time I think that race was kind of invoked was when I think the first week after the group formed, they're walking backstage, and Kazarian's like, "Hey, what's up, brothers?" And then they jump him. And that was, like, the last thing that could have been construed as racial. Everything else has just been like, this is MVP and these guys that want to get power. So good job, TNA. I'll give, you know, credit where credit's due. Good job, Chris, to hear me if you booked this. Oh, that is a... I was going to say something, but I don't want to talk bad about people. It's not what this show is about. I guess that we're gonna wrap things up, but before we do, last thoughts on the state of the WWE or TNA or Global Force Wrestling, anything that's on your mind before we get out of here?
I'm just looking forward to Money in the Bank. It's one of my favorite pay-per-views. I really like how they booked the Money in the Bank briefcase, and I hope the winner of the Money in the Bank cashes it in. I really think the Money in the Bank losing it and not winning the title should be an exception. It should be at least an 80% cash in ratio in winning a title.
Does Kofi get into Money in the Bank this year?
Yes.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
So who's gonna have that Kofi Shelton Benjamin role this year?
Seth Rollins.
Oh yeah, I could definitely see Rollins in that role.
I think we could see multiple Shield members in it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, sorry, Kofi.
There's always Bo Dallas. Final thoughts to me: wrestling's not fun right now. It's nothing is really intriguing in either company to me, and I find myself spending more time watching old stuff on the network than the current stuff. So at least that's around.
You still watching Clash of the Champions?
Yep. I watched, the last one I watched was Shockmaster's debut. Flair for the gold.
Yeah, I think John and Way are reviewing World Class this week on Review of Ways. Have you checked out any of the World Class on the network?
I haven't yet. I haven't seen any World Class ever.
I've seen a few of them. That's like the most of the old stuff I've watched is World Class. And it's good. It's very good. Some of the matches, the match types are very, very slow, especially with Terry Gordy, who I know is a very good worker. Some of the matches he'd be in, he would spend more time like egging on Von Erich because it was a TV match. And, you know, they went slow, but it was a very good product.
I used to love World Class because where I'm at down here, it was like we got the best of a lot of worlds because we had, of course, the NWA, WCW stuff on TBS. We had the WWF stuff on USA. We had AWA on ESPN2, and then locally we had both USWA down in Memphis and World Class from out of Dallas.
So
we had ECW too. So like for me, wrestling in the 90s was just crazy because any given day of the week there was some wrestling on, and World Class was one of my favorites because they were kind of like Memphis in a sense where they'd have the outrageous storylines. Like I remember. The big one was Chris Adams and Steve Austin before he was Stone Cold, and they were both like Chris Adams' ex-wife was Steve Austin's manager, and they were feuding with Chris Adams and his current wife. Like, that was a crazy feud. The Von Erichs and the Freebirds, of course. Just a lot of great workers down there that, unfortunately, like most of them were on crack, and they're not around anymore. Yeah. But I was a big fan of Kerry Von Erich, too. Like, you talk about getting the most out of a guy with limited skills. Like, Kerry wasn't a great wrestler, and he wasn't a great talker, but if you just watched those shows, you thought he was, like, the biggest star in the world. And those matches, like, with Ric Flair and Jerry Lawler and people like that, when they'd come into town, like, they made this dude look like, you're like, he's bigger than Hulk Hogan to these fans.
Did you see the Von Erichs going to be wrestling on Slammiversary?
Yeah. We didn't talk about that. I guess Kevin.
Von Erich boys, Kevin Marshall Sons. And Ross.
Yeah, I'm actually excited about that. You know, that may be the part of the show where the crowd is the most alive in that area in Dallas because they're like, oh, these are people we know. We love the Von Erichs, even if the Von Erich name isn't what it once was. So I haven't seen any of the footage of those guys. So, but TNA's had a history with the Von Erichs going back with the.
With
the beautiful people. So,
and I'm surprised that you're letting the Von. I mean, you would think the Von Erichs, after all they've been through, would have, you know, expelled themselves from wrestling altogether. But I mean, apparently it's in their blood, so they're going to give it another go.
I'm surprised Kevin. Like these are Kevin's sons. I'm surprised. Like he was like didn't forbid them, or maybe it's a case where they wanted to do it so much that he's like, okay, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it the right way, because he was like the only son, I guess, that was really had a good head on his shoulders, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah, if you ever see, I know the WWE did a documentary on World Class, but there's another one that was like independently produced. And I think Kevin Von Erich is one of the producers. And it's great because he just walks through the sportatorium and it's all run down and roaches and rats up in the place now. And, you know, he's like, over here is where my brother and Chris Adams would hang out. And over here is where I first met Michael Hayes. It's all these great stories from a promotion that I think a lot of the current fans and the younger fans, you know, they don't know about. And so that's why I'm glad the network is putting these shows out.
Yeah, I knew nothing. It was before my time as a kid. I mean, I didn't start watching wrestling until 93.
Yeah, that was when World Class was on the way out.
And I mean, even if I was watching wrestling, we weren't getting it in Los Angeles, I'm pretty sure. So it was one of those regional things that if you live in the right place, you got more wrestling content than others. And
well, so you probably got a lot of AAA out there.
Yeah, on like Telemundo, Univision, we got AAA. And then now we get NWA. That comes on out here, the local Hollywood.
Championship Wrestling in Hollywood.
Yeah. I think it's all the local stuff we get. I mean, we don't get Ring of Honor. I wish PWG had some type of TV deal, but they don't. That would make sense out here. But yeah, there's not much outside of the big names.
Yeah, I was going to say, LA used to, because wasn't that where All Pro Wrestling was?
Yeah, and what was that promotion in the early 2000s? What was it, the ECW promotion out here? Like the hardcore?
Oh,
XPW.
Yeah.
XPW. With Rob Black. the porno producer.
Yeah, Lizzie Borden. You talk about train wreck wrestling. Go watch some FTW shows.
Oh, man, yeah.
Oh, my.
And New Jack.
Yeah.
He threw a homeboy off the scaffolding or whatever, Vic Grimes.
Yep, that was FTW.
Mass Transit.
Yeah, that's I remember I bought the first XPW show on a VHS because it was like they pulled out all the stops for that one show because it was like Shane Douglas, Sabu, New Jack. It was basically all the ECW stars. And then Missy Hyatt was on it. And then after that, I got the next one and it was like nobody. It's just like the regular XPW people. And I was like, man, what type of bait and switch is this? I came to see Shane Douglas, not I don't even remember any, Chaos, Joey Chaos. I didn't come here to see Joey Chaos. Shout out to Joey Chaos, who we'll never have on this program. But yeah, so yeah, that's world class. Yeah, I really like that promotion. So yeah, I'd say the thing in terms of my overall feeling about wrestling right now, I'd have to agree with Marcus because I was not, I won't say I wasn't entertained, but I wasn't really enthusiastic about Payback tonight. I was more interested in hockey, and that's saying something for me.
Wow.
Yeah, I was more into the hockey game than the wrestling. But, I mean, there's a lot of characters I like in the WWE in terms of, you know, Daniel Bryan, in terms of I'm starting to come around on Bad News Barrett, Cesaro, the Wyatts, but it's the booking. It's the booking. You know, give me a reason to be invested in this. And I mean, they've had some bad luck, but you know, bad luck does not excuse all the mistakes and all the general state of the WWE right now. So come on, Global Force, and give us a real alternative.
You're funny.
Hey, man, they got 500 workers on the database.
You're funny.
I just imagine, like, Karen Jarrett walking around like Alexander York with the laptop. Like, Terry Taylor, is he active? Nope. Okay, take him out of the database. Bobby Eaton, is he around?
It's a beautiful one.
What's Sergeant Craig Pittman up to? He went AWOL. Oh, and speaking of going AWOL, we are headed out the door. But before we do, Brother Marcus, where can people follow you and check out your opinions on the world of professional wrestling?
I don't tweet about wrestling, but...
No, you really don't.
I don't. Part of that's because I feel like there's like 10 people who follow me because I worked at Yahoo. So, you know, I try to.
You can't come out the closet yet.
I've come out at work. They know at work. They've embraced me and it's generated some traffic. But yeah, you know. Twitter, Instagram, Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Oh yeah, I did have a quick question, Marcus, on Yahoo, mm-hmm. like on my Yahoo homepage.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes up and, you know, you've got like the little scrolling bar with the top stories
mm-hmm.
on that second column where it's like the, you know,
underneath.
Right. Is that does that come from you guys or is that stuff that you pull from other sources?
So that stuff, some of the stuff is ours. Some of it is it's pulling in content from other sites and it should be set to where it starts to recognize what you read. So if you start seeing more wrestling stories or more stories that interest you, then that's what should be. That's what should be showing up in your feed?
Well, it is working because about 2 weeks ago, I was just going on Yahoo to check my email. And then mm-hmm. I was like, TNA might be bringing back the six-sided ring. Like, nigga, this on Yahoo? I got to send this to Marcus.
Yeah, that wasn't a Yahoo story, but it's being pulled in through whatever site it was. So, yeah.
You're like, is this Mike it's working. Talking about TNA?
No, it's working then.
Yeah, so yeah, you can tell your people that the algorithms are doing their job.
Good, that's good to know.
So, Big Nasty, where can people follow you and get into in-depth conversations about Bray Wyatt and the silly booking ideas you have?
Follow me at This Is Nasty to read more of my genius. Send me tweets from my mailbag series, which I have gotten a lot of your tweets, and you will be featured. And watch my shows, Raw Review, WTF. I don't know if I like the whole algorithm Yahoo thing, because, like, if you're some hardcore conservative Republican or even some hardcore liberal with one-sided opinions, you're going to just fed that information instead of, like, maybe getting a newspaper that'll be able to distinguish fact from fiction. And, you know, it's just going to create a bigger divide in our society. So, in an essence, I think Yahoo is ruining.
Says the guy who works for Bleacher Report. So, really. It's interesting.
We are upholding the integrity of the world, and my guy Mike Freeman would definitely argue the fact that Yahoo is ruining the world. Maybe while I'm on the show.
Really? I think Freeman would disagree.
I think I heard him say, as he was walking down the hallways the other day, Yahoo is ruining the world. And he told me to tell you that.
Really? Mike was out here? I didn't know that.
Mike was in. He was in the hallways and just walking around saying that Yahoo is ruining the world.
He was in the ghetto in Paramount.
Yeah, in that Bleacher Report LA office.
I think he's the guy who took my car, and he was driving around in Paramount saying that Yahoo was running the world.
Yeah. This is why we don't let Alfred talk sometimes. Oh, you can find me on Twitter, where I won't be besmirching other people's corporations. Usually. And in the number 8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us at KOSPOD, KOS_POD, KOSPOD on Twitter. Be sure to check us out on iTunes and Stitcher, Facebook.com/The Kings of Sport. If you like the show, if you're a wrestling fan, share us with your wrestling friends. Come out of the closet. Don't be like Marcus. Show everybody. You got to be true to yourself.
Isn't I'm that, out, but I just, you know.
Isn't that what Darren Young taught us?
Oh.
Come on out, Marcus.
See, this is why we don't let Nate talk.
Ah, yeah.
Read the newspaper. Read the newspaper. No algorithms.
Issues like
newspapers.
That.
Read newspapers, America.
But yeah, that's going to end the show this week. We'll be back on Thursday, somewhere around there. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, somewhere in there. You should be getting a brand new edition of the Kings of Sport, which will feature our conversation about the NBA Finals. Somebody on this show picked the Spurs and the Heat. I'm not going to point fingers and say who, but somebody did, a very smart and wise person. We're going to talk about the NHL with the coast-to-coast series, New York and L.A. And, again, Jamie and Bill at Mr. Throwback Thursday, put your thinking caps on so we can get a wager going on here between the two shows. And we'll probably have some ratchetness. I'm sure we'll have some ratchetness to talk about in segment 4 by then. So yeah, without any other business on the table, we're going to let you guys go. Thanks for checking out this special extended edition of the Ringside Wrap, recapping WWE's Payback. You can leave feedback for us on Twitter or on the Facebook page, and you know, let us know what you think about the current state of WWE and TNA. So, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, for Marcus, say it loud, I'm a wrestling fan and I'm proud, Vanderberg, I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD. Or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, thanks.